Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and there are two fabulous DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. These are by a dear friend of Real Science Radio, Spike Pisaris, and Spike has created simply the greatest astronomy DVDs ever produced. And we have gone through probably hundreds of science DVDs and books, and we recommend only the very best at our store, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and you'll love these astronomy DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. You got to get them.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into
Subaqueous
Science Radio.
What's this subaqueous stuff?
Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. You know how scientists are like lawyers sometimes? They don't speak in a way that we could understand them. So they talk about subaqueous extrusion. I wonder if I have a subaqueous extrusion. I hope not. Actually, I guess it's pillow lava. But even at that, a lot of us don't know what pillow lava is. But to talk about that and many other amazing things that are on the surface of this Earth that God made for us, we have one of our favorite archaeologists slash geologists, and that's Dr. Don Patton. Dr. Patton, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
Thank you, sir. Good to be with you.
Well, Dr. Patton, you are coming to Denver Friday evening to speak at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. That's a joy. I heard you speak there a couple years ago. You persuaded me on some very important issues, so thank you for that. But could we begin? I know we're going to talk about Noah's Ark, but could you begin by explaining what pillow lava is for us?
Pillow lava is what is extruded, poured out of a volcano underwater. It's the shape that physics demands that the lava takes as it cools underwater, and it only forms underwater.
I'm looking at photographs of pillow lava on Wikipedia, of all places. And I could see why they call it pillow lava. It sort of looks like pillows that you'd throw on a bed.
It's about a meter across and the shape of a pillow like you'd have on your couch.
Mm-hmm.
And very easy to recognize because of that. And sometimes they're broken and you can see the cross sections and see the concentric circles that go all the way through it. You look in the geology textbooks and you can see some pretty good pictures of it, but they're not as good, or at least the ones I've seen, are not as good and obvious as the ones that we see on Mount Ararat. Mm. And, of course, the real significance there is the fact that this means it was underwater. And we find it just a huge field of pillow lava at just over 8,000 feet near the base. And then also, as we go on up higher, at 12,000, there's an excellent example, but that's well over 2 miles high. Mm. And if you have pillow lava better than what you see in the geology textbooks at 12,000 feet on Mount Ararat, then you have very obvious evidence that this was underwater.
Dr. Patton, I once saw a photograph of a well-known scientist taking a nap on that pillow lava. Well, maybe not taking a nap, but I think that was you.
I wasn't quite asleep. That's pretty hard. It's not soft like the pillows on the couch. But
right.
In fact, I got a pretty good gash in my head as a result of one of those pillows. But
oh, I recall that is, when you were injured. Dr. Patton, let me tell the audience a little bit about you. You have helped excavate the Pool of Siloam in Jerusalem. This was
correct.
A significant development in understanding the city of Jerusalem. And that tied in a significant way in one of the most important debates I've ever had, where the Pool of Siloam came up and the Tower of Siloam, while the news of that excavation broke. So thank you for that. You have also excavated one of the longest dinosaur tracks in North America. Do I have that right?
It is the longest, or was at the time, the longest on the North American continent. Over 500 feet long, a consecutive dinosaur trail.
500 feet, and when you have a right-left sequence, it becomes obvious to everyone that this is a track, and that right-left sequence went for, like you said, 500 feet, hundreds of footprints.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And some of them are probably the most detailed and spectacular tracks in the world. The claws are just extremely detailed and obvious. Scary looking.
There is one other thing you've done. There's so much that you've done, but one other thing I'll remind the audience. We mentioned this when you were on this program a couple years ago, and that was when CNN, Fox News, all the media in the world practically reported that there was a find of Noah's Ark on Mount Ararat. Some Chinese Christians had a press conference in Singapore, if I recall. And one of Turkey's leading seismologists, and I believe you, the both of you, went to Ararat immediately and climbed the mountain, and you guys officially debunked this was an intentional fraud perpetrated on Christians and others, and you guys authoritatively debunked that fraud. So I think the world owes you a debt of gratitude for that, and that's something you did just in 1 week. So thank you,
well,
Dr. Patton.
Thank you, and that certainly needed to be done. It was rather absurd, but the world was paying attention to it, and they produced a DVD that brought in millions of dollars, and the motivation was obvious. Dr. Sally Barakturan was with me on that video. He was head of the Department of Seismology for 25 years at Ataturk University there in Turkey. He's now at the University of Ankara. But he had been chosen by the government of Turkey to do the geological survey in preparation for their oil pipeline. He told them that they were putting it in the wrong place, and they fired him. And 2 months after the oil began to flow, it broke right at that place, started a fire that killed over 100 people.
Oh, my.
But he told them. Anyway,
yes.
He was the one that appeared with me on the video, and he has done extensive survey of the mountain, and he's persuaded that it came up in what the typical geologist would call mid-Mesozoic, which we would call mid-flood. And even some of the very competent creationist geologists have said, no, it was after the flood. I think he knows more about the geology of that area than anybody in the world, and he says, no, that's not the case. And then, of course, if we've got the pillar lava at 12,000 feet, that's not after the flood. You can't have a 2.5-mile-high local flood.
Right.
That was in the flood when this was extruded.
When you guys went to Ararat that time, I know you've gone many expeditions there, but that time, if I recall, there was a local unscrupulous businessman who hired contractors, told them that he was building a movie set on the mountain, and then took photographs, some video, if I recall, and they claimed that they had found and they were inside part of a remnant of Noah's Ark.
Oh, it looked great. They told the workers they were building a movie set, and so they were working hard, and they were happy to be a part of that. But then when they saw the press conference where they were claiming this was Noah's Ark, they knew better, and they got very upset about it and contacted us and actually escorted us up to the site where it had been built.
Wow.
And if you get the cameras up close enough, it really looks impressive.
Yeah. And they contacted you guys because, Dr. Patton, you've had years of building relationships with archaeologists, seismologists there in Turkey, and with the locals. You'll be speaking this evening at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, and I urge people to come out to Wadsworth and 21st, Bethlehem Lutheran Chapel. It's the chapel on their property on the south side. And please come on out to hear Dr. Patton. But Dr. Patton, could you give us a preview of some of what you're going to talk about this evening?
We'll be reporting primarily on the excavation this past summer. And it's a little touchy because some of it we really don't want to spread far and wide. If the information got back to Turkey, some lives could be in danger. Mm. There's a long story involved there that we won't go into.
Well, we'll be
talking about what we were able to accomplish. Bottom line is we made a big hole at 3.5 miles up on the glacier where the satellite has seen what eyewitness accounts had told us about years ago under the ice and sees the shape of the arc 32 feet below the surface of the glacier in a bowl-shaped valley. And we dug down to it. We didn't get exactly to it, but very close, actually, within about a meter and a half before our weather window chased us out. It was 50 below, and several had almost lost their lives. And we did drill with the auger into it. It contacted the wood at exactly where it was supposed to do that, and we got some pretty good pieces that we were able to bring back. They were pieces of wood with pitch on it. And if you'd like to see that and know more about it, you'll have to be there tonight. Hard to show that over the radio.
Dr. Patton, you may have been referring to an eyewitness account from an Ed Davis from years ago. There have been claimed sightings of Noah's Ark in northern Iran and there at Mount Ararat. It sounds to me that you are saying that you believe that Noah's Ark came to rest on Mount Ararat, because the Bible, of course, says that it came to rest on the mountains of Ararat, which imply a location.
The Bible is not precisely definitive, but it is rather general in its statement, mountains of Ararat. It would allow a number of interpretations, but the real conclusive evidence about the particular spot comes from the eyewitness accounts, and then the satellite, which told us where to dig, and at that point we dig and we got wood with pitch on it. It's not just finding wood in the ice, but the satellite telling us it sees it, and then we dig there, and sure enough, there it is.
Wow.
So that becomes very good evidence.
That certainly is evidence, and it's a statement of confidence that you are saying that you believe. Of course, if the world is convinced that Noah's Ark has been discovered, if that ever happens, I think it was the first president, the first publisher of National Geographic magazine, who said that this would, without a doubt, be the greatest archaeological discovery in history.
I think that would be fairly obvious. Hmm. Interesting statement was made by Tom Jarrell of 2020 recently, and he said it would be the greatest archaeological find of all time. It would, and I'm quoting, provide for religious fundamentalist hard evidence of the Bible's absolute reliability. Hmm. And that was on ABC. He's not a believer, to the best of my knowledge, but he understands the implications. And if you've got a vessel 2 football fields long, the height of a 5-story building, at 3.5 miles up, the only way to get it there is float it there. And if you do, you don't have a local flood. And you have a supernatural act of judgment. And that's a very powerful message.
Yes. Dr. Patton, we have done shows for years, typically on Fridays, Real Science Radio, and we've looked at the geologic column, the strata, for example, that you see at the Grand Canyon. And of course, there's a story told about that strata that it represents millions of years, but the details are often omitted, especially when tourists are being addressed. But there are these flat boundaries, these gaps between layers of strata that look beautifully uniform. And the evolutionary story is that millions of years transpired. At one place, there's an entire Devonian age that's missing. At one place between two perfect boundaries, allegedly there's 100 million years passed that left not a trace, no deposition, and no erosion. And this seems to be ludicrous. Whereas the biblical account is that this sedimentary strata about a mile deep on continents all over the world were laid down rapidly as the result of a global flood. And then, of course, as people become convinced that there's a global flood, that it has happened, then the billions of years evaporate and they're seen as a misinterpretation of a very clear record in the rock.
I think you're right. And the problem you describe at the Grand Canyon is very real, in fact, somewhat understated in your description.
Mm.
100 million would be minimal. Some would say as much as 200 million at that spot.
Oh, my.
Where the Devonian is supposed to be. And then more difficult is not just the fact that there's the knife edge, which doesn't indicate millions of years of erosion. We know what erosion looks like, and it doesn't leave the knife edge between the two layers. At that point, you have interbedded layers going from the Cambrian, that lowest layer, and then up to the Mississippian almost 200 million years later, and then back, and then back and forth. Eight times they're interbedded, the Mississippian with the Cambrian, and they're supposed to be hundreds of millions of years apart, and this is just not going to work, obviously. If they're interbedded, they're contemporaneous, and it does demolish the concept. And the idea of the average mile and a half of sedimentary rock that covers the continents, of course, is debated. The evolutionists say this built up over millions of years. We say, no, it's a flood deposit with billions of dead things in it. We're describing the same phenomenon, but where's the evidence of the flood deposit? Well, if we've got a structure 3.5 miles high, 2 football fields long, pretty good evidence that there was a universal flood, not a local flood. And I think that means the ball game's over. The slow, gradual millions of years description doesn't work. The flood deposit does. Mm. It's a picture of judgment, not evolution.
Dr. Patton, I don't want my slip of the tongue to hurt your reputation. Let me just clarify what I said earlier, that there is the geologists that work for the USGS and the National Park Service. They claim that two entire periods of the Paleozoic era are completely missing from the Grand Canyon. The Ordovician and the Silurian are completely missing, which is over 100 million years, and the Devonian is sitting just on top of the Silurian. So I didn't want to misrepresent the National Park Service or you.
No, that's correct. In fact, it's worse than that because the Devonian is missing in most of the places. Mm. Now, it is there partially in a few spots, and so they don't talk about it missing, but it is missing in most of the places.
Dr. Patton,
that makes it almost 200 million.
Wow. I have traveled, not like you've traveled. You've worked professionally in a dozen countries, but I've gone to look, and I've gone to Turkey. I've seen what erosion could do, for example, at Ephesus and the Meander River there, and what erosion does in central Turkey. And in Israel, we've gone, and Greece, and on the other side of the world, to New Zealand. And erosion in 1,000 years is ruthless. It's relentless to the terrain, relentless, in 1,000 years.
Or 30 years.
30 years. To claim that 100 million years passed, and you could use a knife and put this flat boundary between these two strata, and because of the fossils that appear in the one below it and the one above it, they say, well, we know when those fossils were there, they're index fossils. So 100 million years passed without a trace. That should document to anyone who is honestly inquiring of the data that whole claim of the geologic column is false. It's incorrect.
Right. I suppose you could imagine a scenario where erosion could produce that, but it really takes some good imagination.
Oh.
But if you've got the two supposed to be separated by almost 200 million years, interbedded, you go from one to the other, back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, it's not possible.
And in some cases,
that in terms of a separation of millions of years.
In some cases, there are transient fossils, like, for example, of raindrops on the top of one layer that were preserved, and they're covered and protected now by the bottom of the next layer.
In almost all bedding planes, you see those ephemeral markings, the ripple marks, the raindrop prints. It's been said if you follow any bedding plane far enough, you'll find ripple marks, the most common sedimentary feature. And those are just there for a brief time, and in order to be preserved, you have to have the host rock forming rapidly. And then to keep it from eroding, you have to have the next rock forming rapidly over it. And you find that all the way up and down the entire column in the display at Grand Canyon.
You just mentioned ripple marks, and I apologize for sort of going off in different directions, but a local geology student, geology is his major, he contacted me because of our science show, and he said what he had learned in class, and this was new to me as a creationist, I hadn't heard this. He said that satellite images of North America from Chicago to the Pacific coast show ripple marks that go across the continent for 2,000 miles. Have you heard that? This is the first I've heard of that, and I, of course, want to look into that.
I don't know of the satellite image. That is rather hard to conceptualize possible, but I do know of correlations that have been made by a geologist professor there in Texas. He spent over 10 years with a number of his grad students out noting the direction of the ripple marks at various outcrops across the country and then putting them back into his computer to correlate when he had achieved some 10,000 data points. He felt like he was able to correlate this, and he could see a directional flow first one way and then another at a different level. But at the same level, you could see the consistent flow that was continent-wide, which would defy the idea of a local flood. Yes, that's a real phenomenon that I believe has been documented. If you have 10,000 data points, I think you're justified in reaching a conclusion.
Dr. Patton, could you tell us a little bit? You spoke about the ark, you believe, on Mount Ararat, buried in ice. Could you tell us a bit about the conditions? You said that your last time on the mountain, it reached 50 below. You guys had to stop because of the weather. Generally, what is it like to get to the elevation that you go to year after year? What is it like? We only have about 3 minutes.
It's not possible to tell you in 3 minutes.
Sorry.
Even imagine. We have winds. We've had the wind gauge break at 100 miles an hour. We had tents shredded. Being in a tent with 80-mile-an-hour winds is a pretty terrifying experience. It's normally maybe 3 or 4 feet across, and under those conditions, it's maybe 6 inches across. It's collapsed on you, and you're hoping that it holds together, and it doesn't always hold together. And when you're exposed to the elements, can be a lethal situation. It's not a fun place.
And in this place, there is, we'd call it, if it was in the tundra, we'd say permafrost, the permanently buried in ice. So that's...
It's crystal. It's like an ice cube. No rocks. It's just absolutely pure crystalline ice down for about 90 feet to the bottom of the bedrock. And that's what you're sleeping on.
So you're sleeping on that ice, and then when you're there, you're attempting to dig through that ice.
That's correct. We dug down an 8x8 hole 34 feet deep.
That sounds like an elevator shaft.
Monumental task.
Sounds like an elevator shaft.
That's what it looked like.
Wow. And so this evening at 7 o'clock at Bethlehem Lutheran Church on Wadsworth and 21st, in Denver, it's on the west side of town. I strongly recommend those of you who can possibly be there to come on out. It's just a few hours from now. It's worth changing your plans. It might change your life. Bring a friend. It's worth coming out to the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship this evening. Dr. Patton, thank you so much and for taking the time to share this with us in advance.
You're quite welcome.
Oh, and give us your website, Dr. Patton.
Bible.ca /tracks.
All right, bible.ca/tracks, T-R-A-C-K-S. Thank you, Don. See you this evening.
Thank you, sir.
So if you've been tuning into this program for some time, Real Science Radio, you know that we have interviewed and even debated some of the more famous scientists in the world, some of the most aggressive atheists, evolutionists, those who oppose, of course, that there's a creator God. They commit their lives to opposing the scriptures. If, in fact, Noah's Ark is ever discovered, if the world is convinced that there's a boat a couple miles up above sea level on a mountain, Ararat of all places, what will happen to these people who have dug in and said there is no God? Jesus Christ did not rise from the dead. The Bible is not God's word. What will happen to these people? Well, Jesus said that even if they see a man rise from the dead, they will not believe. For faith is a matter of the heart. It's humility. God has given us enough in the creation, when a baby is born, to see the awesome wonder of our Creator God. There is enough there every time we open our eyes or think about what has happened. There's enough there to know that God is real and He created us. But the evidence is the icing on the cake. So come on out tonight. We'll see if there's more evidence. Our website, realscienceradio.com. That's realscienceradio.com.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist?, Bob Enyart debates atheist Zaketh, a psychologist. We also have two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist? And then Mount St. Helens, The Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realscienceradio.com.